Good morning and welcome. Let me introduce to you my co-host for this next hour. Dr. Thomas McCarty is a longtime audiologist and certified dementia provider and is the owner, founder, and director of Audiology for Audiology Associates here in Anchorage. He joins us for a series of conversations this morning. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Dave.
Always a pleasure to see you. You're looking like you're in good health this morning.
Yes, I feel fine.
Are you still training for the Boston Marathon? I know you've run a series of those over the last decade. When is the next one coming up?
The next one is scheduled for April 20th in Boston, and yes, I have started my training.
Wow.
And, I think this weekend I'm scheduled to run 7.5 miles.
So. Do you look forward to these things?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And
absolutely.
Are you one of the oldest participants in the Boston Marathon?
Yes. I think
I say that with respect.
Yes. I think if you've got 50,000 people running in my age group, there might be 250.
Are you all in the same pack as you head out?
No, you're leaving from Hopkinton, Massachusetts, which is a tiny little village.
I see.
And with that many people running on just a two-lane road, they have to stagger the start.
I see. Well, we wish you the best of luck and continued success. Which one will this be for you?
15th.
Wow, that is amazing.
I'll just keep doing it as long as I can.
There you go.
I might age out of it, though.
Is it getting easier or is it getting harder as every year goes by to do the Boston Marathon?
It's about the same.
Okay.
About the same.
Well, fantastic. I was looking at the calendar. November is an important month for this program right here in this studio. It is Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month, a cause and a mission that Dr. McCarty has been focused on for some time now. Dr. McCarty, what was the impetus for you to get involved in the fight against Alzheimer's disease and then become a certified dementia provider?
Yes. So our emphasis has always been on continuing education. And especially since it's been 50 years since I was in school. And if I just relied simply on that information, it's dated. For years, we've been focusing on continuing education online and in person in the lower 48. And it was about 9 years ago that we were focusing on the current research with Dr. Darrow's presentation, correlating the ear and the brain, and how you can not only be aware of that research, but implement it directly in our testing, diagnostic testing, and in our medical treatment. And so that's when we started focusing really on this connection with dementia and untreated hearing loss. The research actually started in 2011, and so it's had time to percolate and be reproduced in other studies, and certainly there's a consistency in the results. So there's actually no question that this correlation exists, and we're even starting to see it more in the general media. And so we've utilized that information, and so ironically, now it's benefiting me. That is the reason. My own awareness of this research allowed me to start treatment about a year and a half ago, and I was struggling with it. I was coming up with all sorts of rationales not to start and procrastinate, and then I didn't need it, and I wasn't old enough, and a number of lies that I was trying to tell myself. And finally, I just said, look, I have to start because I can't risk dementia. Why should I take that risk if the research is saying I don't have to?
Do you have a personal relationship with the disease now, today?
Yes. So my mother was diagnosed with dementia and is currently residing in a memory care facility in Las Cruces, New Mexico. And I was unaware of this until just recently this year. But luckily I had already started treatment. I had started with the most powerful thing on the planet that you can do to prevent, reverse, and treat memory, which is to treat hearing with neurotechnology, which I did start. And so what happened? Well, I started her treatment more than 50 years ago when another doctor said, no, it wasn't going to help. And I said, glad you came to see me for a second opinion. This is the only thing that will help. But she was getting kind of lax in using the treatment and the instruments. And I kept reminding her that the research said, you know, this is going to put you at higher risk for dementia. And then my dad said, yeah, she hasn't been using her technology a lot. And I'm like, okay. And then now this is consistent. Now she's got dementia.
Were you shocked when you heard that your mother had the diagnosis of dementia?
No, because I've been hearing that the facts that she wasn't using the instruments in spite of what I was saying and what my dad was saying. My dad, I also fit with hearing instruments. He is religious about using his, and his memory's fine. So again, there's that correlation.
There we go.
That utilization of this treatment is correlated with a decreased risk of dementia and Alzheimer's. And so conversely, if you're not treating your hearing or tinnitus, you are at a higher risk. And so, yes, it's popping up in my own family. And I'd have to say, no, it wasn't a shock or surprise to me. I was unaware of it. And luckily, I've been proactive myself and benefiting from our initial feeling was we want to provide the best service to patients in Alaska and not have them feel like they have to go to the lower 48 to get the most current best practices. And so in the end, it's benefited me. And so I was trying primarily to provide the best service by having it research-based, which is what we've done. And now it allowed me not to be able to talk myself out of starting treatment.
Do you feel like you've stumbled onto something that nobody knows quite yet and that you've walked into this, I don't even know what to call it,
well,
a gold mine of information?
It is. The information just keeps coming. We're talking about the brain. It's so complex that it's going to take a lot of research, and the research is being released year after year, and it's guiding us as far as increasing our successful treatment rate as a result of the successful diagnostic testing approach that we're using. And I would say a lot of people are aware, but they just are procrastinating implementing any of the changes.
Sure.
So instead of informing patients and providing an informed consent to the patient, they are withholding the information. And so I disagree with that. I think the information, the current research needs to be presented to each patient. And then we're in the U.S. Allow each patient to decide for themselves if they're a candidate. Should they start treatment? That's a personal, individualized decision, but I believe it has to be made with all the current research information at hand. And, uh-oh. Who's that? Somebody calling me. I better turn that off.
It's probably Mrs. McCarty.
That could be a patient calling. I will call them back later.
There we go.
Okay. So, sorry for that interruption.
That's okay.
But we are on 24-hour call.
You're always ready to respond to your patient's needs.
Yes.
When you learned that you were genetically linked to a family member who was in cognitive decline, what became your immediate plan? And did it go beyond you then to other members of the family on down the line?
Yes. So, interestingly, Johns Hopkins, who started this whole connection and correlation between the ear and the brain back in 2011, they had a recent study that they released last year, which looked at patients who had already been diagnosed with dementia. And we know as soon as you say, I think I have a memory issue, the research has shown that there's an up to 90% likelihood that you also have hearing loss that you might not even be aware of. So one of the first things you want to check if you're focused on memory is your hearing. And that's not really happening today.
And that's the disconnect, isn't it, between your new information or your information that's been out since 2011 to today, nobody's getting the link quite yet?
Yes. Well, nobody's using that information to inform the patient that if they walk out, if they're informed that they're a candidate for treatment and they decide to procrastinate, which is what I was trying to do myself, that they're going to be at a higher risk. I couldn't live with that higher risk, so now I'm benefiting from the whole 8-9 year journey of making sure that we had the most current information. I'm benefiting personally myself.
Have you noticed some profound changes in your cognitive awareness, cognitive strength? Has it helped?
Yes, absolutely. My reaction time is tremendously improved, and I've noticed that. Others have noticed that. And that's one of the components that we're testing with the CogniView memory screening test that we're doing. It's not diagnostic, but it does give us a baseline to track going forward. And so I'm still kind of reacting to, gosh, I benefited from this myself. And I wasn't thinking of myself. I was thinking right. In terms of providing the best service to patients. Now I'm a patient myself. And so I'm doubly glad that it can benefit patients, and it's also benefiting me and my family from a going forward standpoint. And so it's kind of funny how that worked out, that there's no doubt in my mind that if we hadn't focused on this, I probably would not still have started treatment on myself. I probably would be procrastinating like a lot of people do. I think it's sure. just instilled in us at birth somehow.
Oh, I'm a master of it.
To say, well, it's not that bad.
Nah.
Not that bad.
We don't have to do anything about it right now, do we?
But we know Alzheimer's is bad. Dementia is bad. Memory loss it's horrible. And it's costly. You lose your sense of self in addition to the financial devastation that it causes. And here we have in our hands the most powerful treatment on the planet. Others have said, no, exercise is at the top of the list. Well, the Lancet Journal says hearing correction is at the top of the list. They did two separate studies that were done by medical doctors. And there's just no question on the effectiveness and the power that it has. We're still researching how it's working, but I don't think we need to delay starting treatment while we figure out the nuance of what's happening in the brain because it's so beneficial. And the other research says, well, it needs to be prescriptive, so it has to be based on a diagnostic test, just simple amplification from just a cheap amplifier. They've done a couple of studies and found that can actually decrease the memory. Not only not improve it, but push it in the other direction for whatever reason. So, of course, there's more research that's needed on that. But that's the kind of the approach we've taken, where we've been open to looking at what we need to do by evaluating the current research and then changing. And yes, it's difficult. The process is different because we don't. It's not something that's being taught by a professor in school. It's something that you're doing yourself. And so it can take a while. There's the trial and error, but in the end, it's extremely beneficial. And so almost every day I'm like, I am so glad that I found Dr. Darrow, that he presented this information. We're looking at all the current research up until today. And I'm benefiting, and more importantly, the patients that are being seen in my office by all of our providers who have access to all this information. And even the people on the phones are utilizing this information.
You're beyond trial and error, aren't you now?
Oh, yeah.
It's just strictly facts,
yes.
Research-based facts in published research papers.
Yes. So it's not our opinion. It's based on the research facts with research that's been done by medical doctors in medical institutions in the lower 48. And that's what we need. That's the criteria that we've set in our office, and that's why we're not jumping on all the flashy new things for tinnitus or that are unproven.
Right.
And those things oftentimes fall by the wayside. And we want...
Flash in the pans, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. We want valid statistical research, not something done by somebody selling the technology themselves. We want independent, statistically verified research findings to point us in the right direction of what we need to do. And so we're not going to be jumping on, let's use eardrops, let's use this, let's use this flashy new thing for tinnitus or for hearing. We're going to stay with what the research shows, and that's why we have a tremendously high success rate because we are staying focused on the, on just what the research is saying.
You and Dr. Darrow of Johns Hopkins have staked your reputations and your legacies on this. Is it risky to do that?
No, I wouldn't say it's
Do you think you'll be
risky.
Proven right eventually?
I think there's the from the people that want to procrastinate and don't want to change, there is criticism based on gut feelings and emotion, but not based on any research.
I see.
So I'm always open to looking at any other research, but they're just really, there's no significant research that disputes any of this. And right now there's over 25,000 research studies correlating the ear and the brain that are listed on the National Library of Medicine website. So this area has a lot of interest. And I think part of it is because the results are very consistent, one study to the next. So we don't see huge variability in the results. And I know I've, from some of the people that are wanting to procrastinate and delay implementing this information, I've heard them say, well, it's controversial. Not from a research standpoint.
Right.
It's certainly not. From a procrastinating standpoint, where you have a lot of people saying, well, I don't believe it. I don't want to do it. I don't want to change. To me, I interpret that as saying, I don't want to maximize the benefit to a patient. That's the way I interpret it. And that's been our whole objective, to find information and to present it to the patient that they might not have been aware of and allow them to make an informed decision on medical treatment that can really potentially make a difference with regard to not only their hearing and their tinnitus, but more, maybe even more importantly, their own memory.
You and I have adult children. Anytime I go to the doctor, they want to know, what do you got, Dad? Because they're concerned about genetics and longevity. When your children, adult children, found out that you were now genetically linked to someone like Grandma, what was their reaction? And are they following a plan also?
Yes. One of my daughters is certainly and has been, and she's also a provider. And so, yes, I'd say again, certainly I benefited personally. My family is benefiting. I've let my sisters know. I have four younger sisters, and I think they all have hearing loss. And I'm like, you better get treatment started. You have a genetic link, and if you leave the hearing untreated, now you've got another link that increases potentially that risk of Alzheimer's.
With over 25,000 pieces of documented medical research into the correlation between hearing loss, tinnitus, and cognitive decline, do you believe it'll ever fall apart, that the research will just flitter away and that it'll be dispelled or found to be untrue, or it was all a hoax, or it was fake news, or
no? There's too many.
I threw a lot at
studies.
You there.
No, there's too many research studies done by physicians,
yes.
And then in order to get these research studies published in a medical journal, and the review process is by medical physicians who are asking that kind of question: is this true? Does this make sense? Is this consistent with all the other research?
Strict and stringent?
Very strict. And not all the research is able to be published in medical journals, especially the top medical journals. Those are extremely difficult to get research published in. They're just not publishing everything that's being sent to them. I had my first research publication in when I was 19.
Really? I did not know that.
And
it involve audiology?
It involved, yes, it did, indirectly. And so I just thought of that now. But yes, I was interested in research, but I was more interested in helping patients
sure.
directly. So I do have an interest in research, but I haven't done any research in a long time.
When you speak with Dr. Darrow at Johns Hopkins, is it one epiphany after another? In the way that he surrounds himself with the information and then gives it to doctors like yourself?
Yes. And so recently with the tinnitus symposium in Chicago that I attended, he was looking at the 12 most recent studies correlating untreated tinnitus, even without any hearing loss, and the higher risk of Alzheimer's and cognitive decline. And so, again, there's another area and focus. And, again, it's like, wow, okay, same thought pattern. Need to start treatment. If you're a candidate, need to start treatment. Now we find it's, and it's much different than what we were taught. We were taught in the past, if you have no hearing loss and you have tinnitus, don't start treatment. Send the patient away. Tell them to come back and when it gets worse. And now we know that's not correct. Why? Well, because even with no hearing loss, if you have tinnitus, untreated tinnitus does correlate with a higher risk of memory problems. But that being said, in the past, we didn't have the technology capable of really helping that. Now we do. Now we have both the technology, the engineers have focused on making that technology available, and the research saying, well, this is you don't want to turn patients away and have them put themselves at unknowingly at a higher risk. And yet that's happening today. And we even have patients who we started on treatment, they're benefiting from it. And if they see another provider, they're told to discontinue the treatment because they haven't focused on the current research. They're relying on the olden day, unresearched thought pattern, maybe opinion.
So, Dr. McCarty, does what needs to happen is a massive, large-scale wearing and fitting and treatment of hearing loss and tinnitus to eventually see and to understand the effects of the most powerful tool that you have right now on dementia, on cognitive decline, on Alzheimer's? We have to see it on a mass level?
Yes, we definitely need it because it's, you know, as the Johns Hopkins research was done in their School of Public Health. And so it's a public health issue. Why is that? Well, because their gurus are estimating that the rate of Alzheimer's is scheduled to triple within the next 25 years. And it's already at a significant level and to the point where it's causing increased rates of need for long-term care, mm-hmm. which is the most costly thing on the planet about. And
I ought to have you talk to my friend Dave Kutcher, the retirement guy, about that.
Yeah. Well, I do have two insurance policies, but probably more importantly, I'm using the hearing correction going forward. So I'm kind of trying to cover all the bases.
Sure.
So at any rate, yes, I know he's got some things to say about. He's the expert on long-term care.
You and I were children of the 60s and 70s. When we were in school, there was a huge push and an educational drive to get you to not start smoking at an early age. Do you think if there was an early age drive or a campaign for hearing loss and tinnitus that you would see an effect on the numbers of dementia and cognitive decline 50 to 60 years later, like the anti-cancer movement of the 60s and 70s?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I think that now I'm trying to be more realistic in saying that that's obvious that it would need to happen. And it might happen, but it might not happen, like you said, for 50 or 60 years.
Sure.
It might take a super increase in the need for long-term care that's going to bankrupt the country. From a Medicaid standpoint and covering that extreme cost to people saying, we need to start doing something. This is killing the budget. And so I think we need to be proactive, but that I think the reality is it's probably going to be more reactive. And something like that, yes, I could see that happening if you wait 25 years and do nothing. And the rate's tripling and people are saying, what can we possibly do? Well, why don't we try to prevent it or why don't we try to reverse it? It's going to be more difficult, but the hearing and tinnitus correction has been shown to not only prevent and a higher incidence of prevention, but there's also a higher incidence of reversing and improving memory. And that's what the study that was done by Johns Hopkins with dementia patients showed, that fitting them with neurotechnology and retesting their memory showed that their memory was improved. Now, nothing that we're doing is curative. That's not curative, but we're needing more research to see, well, how much benefit could that give you? And there's nothing else that can do that. So we're still left with, well, there might be 15 or 20 other things that you could do to help your memory, but They don't have that capability. At least the research hasn't shown that they're as effective as the is what we're doing right now with hearing correction.
And in talking with you, it seems that the numbers of dementia diagnosis continues to grow. But what we're looking for is a drop in diagnosis.
Yes, we need that.
We need the drop.
In order to...
But how do we get that?
Well, it has to be proactive.
I see.
And if you wait until it's reactive, the numbers are going to spike. And then people are going to say, we have to do something. Now there's an agreement that there's enough to get to the more than 50% vote level to try and do something.
I see.
Now I think it's like, it's bad, but it's not horrible. And so I think that's just human nature. Wait until it's horrible and then do something. But we know for sure there's going to come a breaking point, because if the Alzheimer's rate triples, that means the need for long-term care triples. Absolutely. And probably even there's, other increases, increasing need for long-term care, people just living longer.
Sure.
So that cost could just break the budget, I could see. And most people don't have long-term care insurance. That's expensive. I've got two policies, and I'm hoping that the cost doesn't get to a point where I can't afford it anymore. But it's, if you don't have long-term care insurance and you are at risk for tinnitus or hearing, then, the best thing to do is just start treatment. That's the next best thing to do. If you can't afford long-term care, if you can't qualify. The other thing is you have to qualify for long-term care insurance. And not everybody can qualify. I've talked to people that said they wanted to get it, but they couldn't get it. And the cost just continues to climb along with the long-term care costs. I think it's $20,000 a month in Anchorage, $36,000. In the private sector per month. So it's a lot. And then the other statistic is most people are averaging about a 10-year stay in long-term care. So if you take the yearly number and multiply by 10, then it gets up into the millions.
You and a growing number in your field of audiology are doing the best they can with this treatment of hearing loss, tinnitus, and its link to cognitive decline. What surprises you today when it comes to trying to find a cure, which you have always stated yours is not a cure, but a treatment process? What surprises you when trying to find a cure for Alzheimer's?
Well, I guess I'm surprised that it's taking so long, but on the other hand...
Over 100 years.
it's kind of correlating with the 100-year gold standard hearing test that we have, that a lot of people rely on just that one single test and don't get into the rest of the current testing to find out what the real answer is. So we're at a 100-year mark for trying to figure out a cure, a cause.
We don't even know the cause yet, do we?
It's kind of hard to figure out a cure when you don't know what the cause is. So it's a huge puzzle.
Do you think it originates in the brain?
Yeah.
Let's go down that rabbit hole.
I think it does.
The nucleus of the start of cognitive decline, does it form somewhere inside our heads?
I think it does, but I don't know. I really, it's a huge, nobody knows. And, they keep saying, we're on the verge of figuring this out.
Of a breakthrough.
And the breakthrough, and then there's nothing.
Yeah.
Or it just kind of peters out.
Where do you put your biggest hope in finding a cure? Is it in the researchers?
The research. The research has to continue, and maybe looking at it, outside the box, thinking and that sort of thing. But again, if you're dealing with the brain, it's the most complicated thing on the planet, and so it's not surprising that it's taking this long. But I think what it tells me is let's not put all our eggs in one basket. Let's focus on the treatment aspect, the prevention aspect of treatment. Let's focus on what we know and not disregard that and diminish it and hide it or mischaracterize it, which is kind of what's been happening.
If someone wants to have their own conversation with you about hearing loss, about tinnitus, about cognitive decline, what's the number to call to Audiology Associates here in Anchorage?
Our direct line in Anchorage is 907-278-6400.
You're listening to Live and Local on AM 700 KBYR. Our next conversation with Dr. Thomas McCarty of Audiology Associates here in Anchorage will continue after this. You're listening to Live and Local with audiologist Dr. Thomas McCarty on AM 700 KBYR. I'm Dave Stroh. November is an important month for this program. It's Alzheimer's Disease Awareness Month. It is a cause and a mission that Dr. McCarty has been focused on for over 10 years now. Dr. McCarty, are you, as a medical community and we as a society, are we making progress in prevention and education in the 21st century from what you're seeing today?
Yes, I think we're starting to get the word out. People are getting the word. It's making a difference. If you inform a patient who's a candidate for treatment that there's also this other area of help in addition to the hearing, direct help to the hearing, direct help to the tinnitus, there is an indirect help with memory. There's a correlation. There's an association. With that information, yes, they are more apt to want to start treatment. And so I believe that it's beneficial. It made a difference for me. I there's no doubt in my mind that I wouldn't have started treatment right now.
Sure.
I would be essentially untreated while I was waiting for myself to get worse, but I couldn't afford to do that because I didn't want to take a risk with a higher incidence of an associated memory problem.
Over the years, how has your view of Alzheimer's disease changed, say, from 50 years ago when you were just a young audiologist?
Well, I think the fact that it was hopeless.
Oh.
In addition, there's no cure, so it's hopeless.
Right.
And oftentimes the patients were just completely written off. Well, we don't need to do this. We don't need to provide medical care for this. Why? Well, they have a diagnosis of dementia, so it's hopeless, so there's nothing we can do. And now we do have something that's extremely powerful that shows a positive correlation and it's saying we can make a difference and that it's not hopeless. It's not a cure, but it's not hopeless. There's prevention. There's reversal. There's a very powerful treatment option that we have in our hands that was there all the time, and that you can see from our anatomy charts of 50 years ago and even some today, would show the ear and no brain on the same page.
Sure.
There's no connecting link. And we knew there was a link, but then we just disregarded it, didn't think about it until 2011. And that was the Johns Hopkins wake-up call. And that was coming from the surgeons at Johns Hopkins that focused on the anatomy. And they knew that there was a neural connection, and it just so happened to be the most powerful thing on the planet.
You know, because so many people, millions of people around the world have received the message of there is no hope. You have been diagnosed with cognitive decline, dementia, and Alzheimer's. Is yours a mission of hope?
Yes.
For the first time?
Yes. So we're hopeful versus a hopeless message that's going out based on not awareness or disbelief of the research. And so I think that it's a positive message when I am talking with patients and I show them the anatomy chart that's got the brain on the same page. The usual comment is, this makes a lot of sense.
Yes.
I can understand this. It's logical. And so I don't get pushback there. Where I do get pushback is people just not wanting to start treatment. And I get that. It's just this powerful procrastination effect that we have inside of us. And it's a change factor. Change can be difficult.
So you bring hope into the equation. What do you back up that hope with?
It's totally based on research. It's not my opinion. We've had that question come up at our symposium. Aren't there other people that have different opinions? And Dr. Darrow's response was, this is not my opinion. This is 100% research and fact-based.
Yes.
So there's no opinion involved in this. And so trying to make it about an opinion is, again, spurious.
The number of future Alzheimer's diagnoses, as you have mentioned many times, are staggering. What kinds of personal responsibilities can each and every one of us take, starting now, today, to reduce our risk of cognitive decline and dementia and Alzheimer's?
Well, The most powerful thing would be that there's a few things. If you have tinnitus, even if you don't suspect you have hearing loss, it's good to get in for a diagnostic evaluation. If you have hearing loss, again, good to get in. If you have both hearing loss and tinnitus, yes, you want an evaluation. And now we know from the most recent research, if you have memory issues, what is one of the first tests that you want to do? It's an audiological evaluation, because the research is saying there's an up to 90% correlation with memory and hearing. And you're likely not to even realize that there's a hearing loss without doing the testing, which can certainly show that, even if you're not aware of it. And I had that happen maybe 15 years ago when I had a sudden tinnitus and a sudden hearing loss. I only heard the tinnitus. I didn't notice that I had hearing loss until I tested myself, and I was shocked and astonished that I could, that I not only had a hearing loss, but that I didn't realize that I had a hearing loss until I did the testing. And so we hear that, and people are shocked when I tell them, well, they might know they have tinnitus. They might know they have a memory issue. They're not realizing that they have the hearing loss, too, until we do the testing and demonstrate it. Maybe they can't repeat words when there's background noise. Maybe we're testing a higher frequency range than is standard in the usual tests that are being done. We're looking at the auditory nerve response with our otoacoustic emission testing, which most nobody else is doing, and which we found to be extremely useful. The equipment that we're using works real well, and I discovered it on our mission trip to the Dominican Republic. Mm. They had that equipment down there, and I'm like, this is working so well. We need to have this in our office. And so now we're routinely doing that test. And oftentimes if a patient comes in and says, I'm having trouble, and on the 1922 test, it doesn't show difficulty, that otoacoustic emission can go beyond that test and show auditory nerve damage, starting in the cochlea, and lead to someone starting treatment that might not have otherwise, if they had only, had just a very limited 1922 gold standard, supposed gold standard approach.
You know, when I first met you through this program, I knew that I had hearing loss. I knew that I had tinnitus, but I also, in listening to you, had a lot of fear about that cognitive view test, and I didn't want to know if right. I had cognitive decline. I didn't want to confront that question. So then after, you know, a couple more months, I finally let go of the fear, came into your office, got the treatment, got the test. Right. I feel so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Fear seems to be a big barrier between patients and your office.
Yes.
Not wanting to know.
Yes. Now, and that's why, yes, we try and send out our books, our white papers, our information. So I think that fear can come just from ignorance of the research, not being aware. And so we want to inform the patient. Some of the patients come in, and ideally you want to look at that information beforehand. So if you have any questions while you're in person, you can ask those and get your questions answered. Some people don't have the time or whatever, or don't realize the importance of the information, and they don't get a chance to look at it. So with every patient, I always inform them of this anatomical connection between the ear and the brain, and what that means from a research-based standpoint. And then I mentioned we've changed our test process. One of the tests that we've added is a memory screening test. Now, does that mean you need to be afraid? No, because we're not diagnosing anybody. All we're doing is getting a baseline score that we can monitor. And why would we want to monitor it? Well, if you're a candidate to start treatment, you start treatment. The research says we can improve the score on that test. So now we're not only dealing with hearing and tinnitus, there's a potential improvement. So there's no need to be afraid, not with what we're doing, because right. we're not coming up with any diagnosis. We're tapping into cognitive tests, but it is screening. A screening test only takes about 5 minutes, and more importantly, it's computerized. It's not a test that I'm administering, so it's a fair test. I waited until there was a computerized FDA-approved test that was only screening, and that's what we've been using. And I think really the biggest benefit is the fact that we can see the scores improving and the patient benefiting from that, not only the test process, but from the treatment.
If someone's ready to get over their fear, what's the number to call to Audiology Associates?
Our direct line in Anchorage is 907-278-6400.
You're listening to Live and Local on AM 700 KBYR. Our next conversation with Dr. Thomas McCarty of Audiology Associates here in Anchorage continues after this. You're listening to Live and Local with audiologist Dr. Thomas McCarty on AM 700 KBYR. I'm Dave Stroh. Dr. McCarty, are you rewriting what the age of 71 is supposed to look like today?
I think so, and it's puzzling to a lot of people. They're like, why aren't you retired? Well, this whole association with cognitive decline has my interest, and no one else is dealing with it in these parts. So I feel like I'm feeling a need, and I'm also, you know, now benefiting myself, and my family members are benefiting personally. And I did fit my mom. I upgraded her hearing instruments, and she is doing better. And it's a direct result of this research with Johns Hopkins saying, don't give up on dementia patients.
Right.
And certainly, we're not saying that we can help every dementia patient. Of course, the end case, no, they're in the thralls of it, and it, they've waited too long. Yeah, so there could be that where it's someone is not able to be helped with the treatment or the technology, and so but it's a hopeful message at any rate that from Johns Hopkins, and so with their finding, and they looked at memory scores and found them improving with following start of treatment, even with a diagnosis of dementia, that was what impressed me the most with that research.
If our listeners are concerned about their ears and their brain and their cognitive overall health, what's the number they can call to schedule an appointment to have their own conversation with you and your staff at Audiology Associates here in Anchorage?
Our direct line in Anchorage is 907-278-6400.
Dr. McCarty, I want to thank you so much for hearing me out this morning and spending this time with us. Dr. McCarty will join us again next Friday at 8 a.m. for another edition of Live and Local. I'm Dave Stroh. Have a good day.